Welcome to Crossroads. You know, we designed this church to be a place for people who had given up on church but hadn't given up on God. And today we're starting a new series called How Not to Be a Jerkface. So join us in week one as we learn to be a little less jerkface and a little more human.
I think that your 2018 can be the best year of your life. I believe that. And I believe whether or not it is will be dependent upon how you treat the people around you and the power and potency of your relational interconnectedness. So that's why it's about how not to be a jerk. So let's pray before I go any further in 2018. God, I am thankful for a bit of a break, and I'm thankful to be here today, and I'm thankful for a bunch of new folks who are in all of our sites all over the place, and I am asking that you would make the most of our time today. We may have connected with you through the singing we did, and now we want to connect with you through hearing your truth in this timeless book that's called the Bible. So help me to be clear and helpful, and I pray these things according to the character and identity of Jesus. Amen. Well, it is 2018. It's a time to make resolutions, or actually a time to not make resolutions. Fewer and fewer resolutions are happening. Studies are showing that. Because maybe we're a bit bummed out that we haven't kept previous year's resolutions. Or maybe it is that we feel like working on ourselves all the time, so we don't make that big of a deal about it on 2018. I'm not sure about that, but I am sure of one thing, and that is what we're resolved to do, what we want in our lives, the new changes we want in 2018 seems to be changing pretty darn quickly. A Marist poll last week found that being a better person is the most popular New Year's resolution for 2018. It was also the number one resolution last year, marking a shift from the previous decade in which losing weight topped the list 80% of the time. Wow. Wow, that's a resolution. I want to be a better person. That's good. Who's excited about other people being better people? Who's excited about that? Yes, other people should be better people. Not necessarily me, just other people should be better people. Resolutions have changed a lot. It used to be that like everyone was making resolutions to start working out in 2018. So there's still too many people making New Year's resolutions to start working out in 2018. Too many people, because I am not happy about how crowded LA Fitness has been. Not happy about it at all. Hey, folks, we know you're going to give up in 2 weeks. Just do it now. Just do it now. Seriously, like 0 degrees walking an extra 2 lanes of cars in 0 degree weather in my short skivvies is not happy. So no blood, no foul, no need for you to come in. You're going to give up anyway. You are just, let me have my closer parking spot. Happens every year. Just people jacks up all the folks. And I hope you're one of the ones who stays. I do. If you stay, then I won't mind walking in the cold. In fact, I will walk in the cold for you. I care about you so much. I will walk in the cold for you. But it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool that more of us are just saying, I want to be a better people. And to be a better person, we have to be better to the people around us. Now, when we're not doing the right thing to people around us, we're being, as the series is called, a jerk face. The classic jerk face in the New Testament, the classic jerk faces were the religious people. Jesus is walking the earth, and he is teaching, and he is healing people, and he is being inspiring in terms of how he's living his life. And more people are coming around him, and it's the religious people that are the jerk faces. They're the ones who are going like, man, why are people listening to this guy? Someone comes to them and says, yeah, he teaches as one who has authority. Why? Because he owns the message. He's not just talking spiritual platitudes. He owns it. So they're threatened by his communication. They're threatened by his power. They hear and see him doing literal physical miracles. And they can't do them because they're not God. And they're threatened by this. They're seeing, worst of all for religious people, is when someone leaves your religious thing for somebody else's religious thing. So he's seeing, they're seeing people leave their sessions and going with Jesus, and they are just not happy. So they're always behind every bush or every door, trying to catch Jesus in something that isn't true, trying to trip him up. And this is no such difference. The book of Mark, chapter 12, verse 28 and following, it says this. They say, hey, who do you think? They say, what do you think is the most important thing in the entire Bible? What do you think? What is the most important thing in the entire Bible? This is a loaded question. And here's what Jesus says. Well, the most important thing is, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And the second is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these. Now, they've put him in a no-win situation because they have asked him, what is the greatest thing in the scriptures? They're asking for a singular thing, and they're putting him in a no-win situation. Because no matter what he says, they can say, ah, but what about this? Right? I mean, to always boil it down to what is the one thing is to always evoke controversy because there's always good reason why something else should be included. Now, today, if I said to you, what is the most important thing in the Bible? Most important thing. If you've gone to church or if you've not gone to church, you might not even know that it's in the Bible. You would probably say, if you're a modern-day American, you would say, God is love. God is love. People don't even realize that's said in the Bible. It's not said in any other religious literature ever anywhere. If it is anywhere, it's they've taken it from the Bible after the fact. God is love, because that one works for us in our culture. We just love it. But if you went to other ancient cultures around the time of Jesus, they wouldn't have picked that one. They would have picked, like, God is just or God is faithful, because in their cultural situation, the justice of God, that he will make things right ultimately, that's what they're waiting for. Or the faithfulness of God, that even though I may be hurting right now, he is faithful and he is not going to leave me stranded long term. He is faithful. You go to any different culture across over the last thousands of years and different corners of the globe, and they would say different things. And so why is that? It's because there's a bunch of great things in the Bible. How do you actually boil it down to one thing? Well, how do you possibly do that? And Jesus actually does that. He said, actually, he does something that is going off script. He doesn't play by their rules. Whenever Jesus is in the room, he's always the smartest person in the room. So they're saying, give us one thing, and Jesus says, I'm not going to play by that. He actually gives them two things. And so the first thing is this, you shall love the Lord your God. You shall love the Lord your God. Love him. First thing. One of the ways that you can be a better person in 2018 is you can love the Lord your God. Resolve to love. I don't hear many resolutions about that. I don't hear many resolutions about, man, today, this year, I want to be a better lover. This year, I want to be someone that people just feel great when they're around me. This year, I want to be the kind of person that I raise the water temperature in people's life because they get filled when they're around me. This is what Jesus says. Man, the most important thing is to love the Lord your God. Huge, huge, huge. And guess what he might say today? He might say that same thing. Because we're not very good lovers. We're not very good lovers. The second thing he goes on and says, and you shall love your neighbor. That's the second thing. You shall love your neighbor. So two big ideas here. We've got God who's being loved, and we've got our neighbor is being loved. Love, 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 love. Big, 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 big deal. We don't do very good at this today as a culture at all. I've ran across this in the New York Times. Fully 50% of Republicans would not want their child to marry a Democrat, and nearly a third of Democrats return the sentiment. Inter-party marriage has taken the place of interracial marriage as a family taboo. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Really? I mean, that shouldn't surprise me. That shouldn't surprise me. But that's what our culture's come. We love calling somebody else a jerk face. We love calling somebody else wrong. We love demonizing people who are different than us. And it used to be, you're different than me if you just look different than me, you have different skin color. It used to be, you're different than me if you have a different sexual orientation. It used to be, you're different than me if we have a different economic thing. Now it's like, if you vote different than me, I would not want my offspring marrying your offspring. Dude, this is weird. This is really, really weird. There's a lot of things about Crossroads that I can't promise you. But one thing I can promise you is if you don't want to be around people on the left, this is the wrong church for you. If you don't want to be around people on the right, this is the wrong church for you. We have all different kinds of perspectives, all different kinds of attitudes that are here and welcome. We want to love all people. Now, when we speak and we talk about things in the Bible, there will be some definite delineation of things that God likes and things God doesn't like that's in the Bible. But that doesn't mean that we like and don't like certain people being with us. You have to be very comfortable being around people that are different than you in any way, shape, and form, not just in your church, in your neighborhood, in your business. And if you're not, guess what they call you? Jerk face. Actually, that's not what they call you. We actually had a different title we were going to use for this series, and I was like, no, let's not use that one. Almost did. We actually had it in copy. We had it in copy. We're looking at it. I was like, went right there and like, okay, I'm getting old. I know. I'm getting old. I'm not as gutsy as I used to be. But God wants you and I to be great lovers. Now, where Jesus takes these passages from, he takes two separate passages in the Old Testament. This is the Old Testament, by the way. Oftentimes we think of Old Testament as fire and brimstone God. This is Old Testament. This is not fire and brimstone God. This is the character of God. In Deuteronomy 6, verse 4 to 5, it says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord thy God is one God, one God. And you will love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might." That's from Deuteronomy 6. And then Jesus has to love your neighbors yourself. Where does he get that from? He gets that from the book of Numbers, the book in the Bible right before Deuteronomy. It says this, "You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against the sons of your own people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself." Now, these religious people who are trying to find something wrong with Jesus, who are trying to get offended, who are trying to trip him up, to have him say something so they can tell everybody else, "Aha, see, do you see what he just said? You see what he just said? Man, you can't be in his religious camp." These people who are looking for a reason to not like him, when he gets done, they go, "Oh, that's pretty good. Yeah, it's good. You sum up the whole Bible right there. I like it. Good job. Woo-hoo." Now, if they, the people who are out to get him, the jerk faces, if they think that this is a great move and a great answer for you and I, friends, this is a huge, huge key to understanding life and understanding ourselves. If you want to understand a jerk face, understand this. Jerk faces are all about themselves. They don't have the resources to love anyone else because they are keeping all the love that they have to themselves. It's a key thing. Jerk faces can't love other people because they can't part with love. They have to keep the love to themselves. And here's what we need to understand about jerk faces. The key to understanding jerk faces is the key of understanding what we do. Yes, what we do. It's interesting how we think everybody else is a jerk face. We need to get away from, I hope this person's hearing what Brian's saying. This is good. Oh, I'm going to call them up, tell them to attend this weekend. This is great. Call them up, say, "Hey, make the next service, please. No. This is not for fodder for other people who are bothering you. This is for you and I to recognize the things in our life that aren't right in our life. Now, to be clear, there are jerk faces. There are. For instance, if you happen to go to LA Fitness, two things I would appreciate. Number one, if you're a man, do not wear tights underneath shorts. I don't understand why a grown man would wear tights under shorts. You want to wear tights? Great, wear tights. You want to wear shorts? Great, wear shorts. Tights, undershorts, we all know you're compensating for your chicken legs. I don't understand it. I have chicken legs. I'm not offended by chicken legs at all. Doesn't bother me. So you got them, I got them. I'm just not wearing tights in my lifetime. Not going to happen unless it's for warmth. So that's number one. Number two is when you're working out in a public facility where other people are wanting to use the machines, you can't hog two machines at the same time. Do I hear an amen? Anybody? Can I hear an amen? You can't take your water bottle and put it on the pec machine while you go over and do bicep curls and think that your water bottle saves your place. No, it's called a public facility. We all get to use the stuff. The other day I was working out and like, it was awesome. This other guy was there. He had this little shirt on. I went and moved his shirt and he came. I was like, oh, dude, I'm sorry. Let's work in together. I was like, awesome, great, it's wonderful. We can love our neighbor and use the same machine in alternating sets. It's a beautiful thing. But as I sat there, and I get, every time I see that like that water bottle save thing, I'm like, it is. I'm like, and the reason that bothers me is that someone is hoarding, right? They're thinking this resource is mine. I'm not using it. No one else here is paying dues is going to need it or use it because I'm using it, even though I'm not using it. It's hoarding, right? It's keeping. And one of the things that York faces do is they hoard things. We hoard attention. We hoard resources. We hoard affirmation. We hoard the best seats at the table. We hoard accolades for the project that we may have been a part of. And if somebody else who was involved as well. But no, we hoard all that. And when I say we, all of us have an issue with love. And that issue is that we hold things in, we hoard, we try to manage, we try to keep it to ourselves. We all have jerk face tendencies. And you ever realize that it's always the other person's a jerk face, not us? It's always the other person. I can't believe the idiot in the car ahead of me is texting and the light just turned green. What is their problem? We're like, I can't believe. And yet we do the same thing and someone honks us. We're like, what the heck? Jeez, doesn't he know? Like I could do something important here right now? Well, yeah, maybe that person was doing something important. Someone cuts in line. We're like, did a friend of ours kind of invites us? And hey, you want to come up here? We go there. That's not cutting. Nothing wrong with that whatsoever. We lend somebody some money, and they say, hey, I got to borrow $10. Sure, you give them $10. And 24 hours later, you're calling them back and say, hey, man, where's my $10? Just curious. I'm sorry. I need my $10. Okay. Someone loans you money. If they call you back in 24 hours, you're like, what is your deal? I know. We hold other people to a standard that we don't hold. We judge other people on their actions. We judge ourselves by our intentions. I didn't intend to text at the light. I didn't intend to not pay back. We have this double standard, and that's another value of love. There's no double standard in love. It's we're all in this together, all of us going the same direction in the same place. This is especially relevant for us in our culture as we see many of us who are men in our country have dropped the ball on being protectors. We've not been protectors. We've actually been predators. And as more and more stories come out about women who are being taken, been taken advantage of or all that stuff, it's shining a light. It's not the majority of men. Of course it's not the majority of men. What are the jerk? I don't know if I talk about this. You jerk face like, well, all men do not do this. I know all men. You're such a freaking jerk face. Can you stop and just recognize this has been a problem? In fact, talk to all the women in your life and see how many of them will tell you about a time they were made to feel uncomfortable by a man. But a jerk face doesn't want to even engage with that. They just want to be a jerk face, right? We have to take a look at how we are being loving to all people in all situations. USA Today said this. I was asking a friend of mine who was acting sort of defensive, do you think that you've ever made a woman feel uncomfortable? And he was like, not like that. And I was like, no, but seriously, do you think you've ever made a woman feel uncomfortable? And he was super reluctant to answer the question. Everyone judges themselves on their intentions, and they judge other people on their actions. Take a critical look at yourself. All of us have latent jerk face tendencies. They're either out there to be seen or they're latent. They're inside of us. The way that we can resolve to love better, that is to love God and love others. Jesus says, man, you're loving God and you're loving your neighbors, man, you have got life down. You are going to have a full 2018. You really are. The way that we're able to love God and love others is that we are able to feel God loving us. Show me a person who has a hard time giving love in whatever form, affirmation, finances, time, whatever. Show me a person who has a hard time giving love, and I'll show you a person who has a hard time feeling loved by God. When we don't feel loved by God, we feel like we need to hoard everything that is around us. I've been meditating on a verse in the book of 2 Kings chapter 3, verse 16, that like blows away my paradigm of who God is. Let me tell you a little bit about myself so you understand why my paradigm is so warped. I am an orphan. I was born at a very young age, and then I was adopted. And even though I was adopted at birth, just kind of being adopted and it just did weird things to me, where I had an orphan mentality, which means that I'm fighting for whatever gruel is on the table, which means I'm trying to make sure that I'm getting mine and everything like that, which there's some good things about that with me and God, because I'm never expecting God to have anything. Like, I've always seen the televangelist thing, and I've gone, I don't get that at all. I have like zero expectations of God. Therefore, when he blesses me, which he does quite frequently, I'm like, oh my gosh, woo, man. Because I feel his love way more than I anticipate to feel his love. The orphan mindset doesn't expect to feel love or to receive things from God. This has been one of the challenges I've had in my relationship with God, but also on the other side, on the positive side, it keeps me in constant gratitude with God, because when I get something from him, it's just spontaneous worship happens, spontaneous gratitude. I just one of the most thankful guys going, maybe because my orphan thing makes me feel like I'm not entitled to anything. I'm like the least entitled person that you may meet, I think. Of course, we all think that way, right? But this book, passage in 2 Kings 3, 16 to 18, two back-to-back things just kind of blew my paradigm of God, and I want them to help blow your paradigm of God so you can feel God loving you. And if you begin to feel God loving you, you're going to be giving love to other people, and your 2018 is going to be way, way better. Because the more people who feel love from you, the more people who will give you your best, the more people who will support you, the more you will feel connected, the more you will laugh, the more you will have a safety net, the more you will feel purpose in your life, the less isolated. I mean, it is like, man, it is. The wheels of the bus go round and round and round. When you're giving love and you're receiving love, whatever form it is, and love happens. Why? Because God is love. God doesn't love. God is love. God isn't faithful. God is faithfulness. God doesn't give justice. God is justice. That is his identity. Part of his identity is love. That is who he is. So when you get God, you get love. In ways that are beyond what the self-help industry will ever be able to provide you. Because self-help is about yourself helping you. Getting to God is about getting something from God that only he has, which is a divine, transcendent love. And this thread goes all throughout the Bible. So in the Old Testament, you've got these weird people known as prophets. They're looking as weird because prophets would bring messages from God through the prophet to the people. And these prophets oftentimes were bringing like hard messages from God, and sometimes they were bringing like really, really great things from God. This is an example today of bringing a great thing from God. The nation of Israel is in battle against Moab, and as they're in battle, It's a longer campaign. The water is running out. They're thirsty. It's a dry season, and so they need water, but they really need it in an odd way. If they get water and it rains, oh, good, I can hydrate myself. But if it rains, everything is going to get muddy, and then their chariots aren't going to operate. And if you ever tried to have a campaign or just go for a run in the mud or have a football practice in the mud, you know what I'm talking about, it doesn't make for an efficient use of energy. And so this is what happens. And he, Elisha, this prophet, said, "Thus says the Lord, I will make this dry stream bed full of pools. For thus says the Lord, you shall not see wind or rain, but that stream bed shall be filled with water, so that you shall drink, you, your livestock, and your animals. This is a light thing in the sight of the Lord. He will also give the Moabites into your hand." Now, this is pretty wild. It's pretty crazy what he says is going to happen here. He says, what's going to go on here, this water is going to come, and you're going to get the best of both worlds, because God's going to cause it to rain away up higher in the mountains. See those dry stream beds? It's going to happen way, way up there, the moisture, and it's going to fill these beds and come down to you. So now you've got these moisture beds coming. You're going to drink, and all your cattle is going to be wonderful, wonderful. But you're still going to have great land to marshal this campaign. That's pretty crazy, isn't it? That's pretty awesome. But here's the thing I love. This is great. Watch this. And then here's the, and this is a light thing. This is a light thing. That is how great God is. God can cause rain to happen one place that reaches people in another place, and he does it specifically and intentionally. It's a light thing. See, as an orphan, I can oftentimes think, all right, God just sent something good my way. But, man, kind of bummer. That means I'm not going to get anything for a long time. I mean, I wish maybe I shouldn't have had this good thing happen here. Maybe it should have been like later on, because now I've used up all my chips with God. Because now he's going to go and he's going to bless somebody else. Some of us operate this way. It's called you don't want to pray for yourself. You're afraid to pray for yourself. You're afraid to pray unless you have cancer or something like that. Because I got to save up my credits with God. I'm not going to ask him for a good deal on this car. I got to wait till I have stage 4 here, or the first time I find out about it. You feel this way with God too. You feel like he's only got so much time for you. He's got too many responsibilities. Or you feel like he's just going to wear him out if you keep talking to him, you keep praying, and you keep asking things. What you're saying, or what we're saying, we say this is, God, you really don't love me. I'm really not that important to you. I'm really not important enough to register on your to-do list. You really don't have space in your mind for me. If you actually did some things for me, unfortunately, that would divert other needed resources for people who are worse off than me, because there's only so many worse resources to go around, and you know I can't have it because maybe somebody else is more fortunate. We think all these things, but when you boil it all down, what we're really saying is I'm really not worthy of love. I'm not worthy of love. And we feel like we're not worthy of love, perhaps because we're not giving love. We have a total love outage. And God says, it's a light thing for me. I can bless you. I can bless that. I can keep doing it. It's a light thing. I got more than enough resources. You might not get, and I might not get, what I want right now, but it's not because it's a heavy burden to God. It's a light thing. Whatever he does, he is stronger and larger and more infinite and more, has more capacities than you and I will ever comprehend, let alone ever tap into. That's a light thing for him. Now, this is a critical statement to understand another verse that's a big one. I bet if you've been going to church your whole life, it's very likely that you've never heard that passage I just gave you. Very likely. Your whole life, you never heard that thing. It's a light thing for me. Because religion doesn't like to play this up. Religion likes once they get hard. It's hard, darn right it's hard. Boy, life is hard and God's hard and that's the way it is. Oh, hard, really hard. Not like, hey, it's a light thing, no big deal. Very likely you've never. Now, this next one, this you have to understand that being a light thing to understand the next thing. Because the next thing is a bit better known of a story, and I'll just read it for you. It goes like this. Now, the wife of one of the sons of the prophets cried to Elisha, "Your servant, my husband, is dead, and you know that your servant feared the Lord, but the creditor has come to take my two children to be his slaves." And Elisha said to her, "What shall I do for you? Tell me, what have you in the house?" And she said, "Your servant has nothing in the house except a jar of oil." Then he said, "Go outside, borrow vessels from all your neighbors, empty vessels, and not too few. Then go in and shut the door behind yourself and your sons, and pour into all these vessels, and when one is full, set it aside." So she went from him and shut the door behind herself and her sons. And as she poured, they brought vessels to her. And when the vessels were full, she said to her son, "Bring me another vessel." And he said to her, "There is not another." Then the oil stopped flowing. And she came and she told the man of God, and he said, "Go, sell the oil and pay your debts, and you and your sons can live on the rest." For you to have a great 2018, you have got to resolve that you will be a better lover. And you have to believe that God is resolved to love you. You have to believe that God is resolved to love you. You have to believe that there are resources coming your way. And I'm not talking just financial stuff. I'm not talking financial at all. That could be. I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying awarenesses, feelings, opportunities. You have to believe that God is resolved. God is love, and that love extends to you. And you've got to believe that. And you've got to work on believing that. In this story, again, in the Old Testament, where people think that God's all this wrathful thing, you ought to read it sometime. All the people who accuse God of that thing, I've never read it. Weird to me. Here, this is one of them. We've got somebody who has accumulated debts. She's lost her husband. Maybe she never had a husband. Don't know. And some of us might say, "Well, hey, you made your bet. You got to lie in it now, right? You got to figure it out." Well, no, they're in the midst of debtor's prison. And Elisha says, "Well, what do you have? What do you have?" So, "Well, I got the bottle of oil." This is interesting what God does. Oftentimes, the next level that God takes you to will be based on what you have right now. What do you have right now that he wants to work with? I mean, people who want to be maybe a teacher, maybe they want to be a pastor, maybe some of you might like feel like, "Man, I want to get into ministry, but I don't know that I could do the whole speaking thing." Well, if God hasn't given you the communication gift, you probably shouldn't go into an occupation that demands that. There's ministry positions that require the crunching of numbers. There's ministry positions that require having an unending massive heart for the broken to go and visit in hospitals, all kind of. But you shouldn't say, "Yeah, I'm going to pray that God gives me the ability to speak in front of thousands of people." If you haven't shown signs of that in front of 20 people, he's not going to give you that for thousands of people. What is it that you have right now that God may multiply to be able to bless other people around you? And she says nothing except a jar of oil. Now, this jar oil was a pretty big deal back then. You could massage it into your scalp to keep it from being too flaky in the midst of that dry, arid climate. You could use it as money, actually. You could use it for medicinal purposes. It was a really, really great resource to have. She's got this jar. We don't know how big it is, but probably not big, maybe that big. And he says, I can work with that. So he says, go and get all the vessels you can. Go get all the vessels and bring them in. Now, I wonder, when she and her sons are told that the prophet wants them to get a bunch of vessels and there's going to be a miracle that's happening here, I wonder if they actually knew the full depth of what was going to happen. I wonder, did they just go to like the two neighbors around them? "Go ahead, do you have any like bottles? You go, okay, good, I'll take it. Hey, do you have any bottles? Okay, good." Do they think, okay, something big is about to happen here. Prophet Elisha, do you mind if you meet us back here in a week? Because we're going to go out, we're going to go out and get every single vessel. Or did they just out of obligation go and, I don't know. We do know that when they bring the jars in, it's enough that it's inside one room. It's not outside the room. So they didn't get that many. she didn't live in a mansion, probably a one-room, you know, little lean-to kind of thing. Brings it in and says, okay, start pouring. So she takes the pours, oh my gosh. Hey, Johnny, Shadrach, give me another one. Everybody's getting another one. Pour. Oh my gosh, Daniel, give me another one. Daniel, pour. Mihai, give me another one. Come over here. Give me another one. My gosh, boys, my wrist hasn't changed at all. It still feels just as heavy. Give me another one. Man, what is going on here? How many more we got left? Mom, we got six. Okay, bring them here. There's five. There's four. Three. Here's that one. Over. Wow. Man. It does make me wonder. Am I expectant of the love of God in being a vessel and expecting him to fill me up? Am I putting myself in positions that necessitate that I have faith that he is going to show up? Because that's exactly what they do. Well, what does it look like if a week later they go back and take everyone's jars? And they go, what did you need the jar for? Oh, I don't know. We just wanted to sleep with it one night and take it back. I mean, what's going on there, right? I wonder. You know, this weekend at Crossroads, big weekend. We have a brand new site that's starting in Dayton and a brand new site that's starting in East Side. Great stuff. Welcome Eastside and welcome to Dayton. Great being on the same team with you. Now, what's interesting about that is Dayton is the very first site that we have had across. We've got 12 now. The very first site that came out of a site other than Oakley. Every site that Crossroads ever started has come out of Oakley. Dayton is the very first site that's ever come out of Mason. I'm talking about in the Cincinnati area. Now, in Central Kentucky, very similar as well. Richmond and Georgetown both came out of the same site out of Andover. It's very rare for other sites to start other sites. We're starting to see it now. It's awesome. That's great. That's wonderful. For Oakley, it's interesting. Oakley has experienced the oil again and again and again. Oakley has poured itself out as a site and filled up site after site, and the oil keeps flowing in Oakley. Thousands upon thousands of people have left Oakley to go to Florence, Mason, Westside, Eastside, Uptown, Oxford, and I'm probably forgetting some. Thousands. And right now in the service which I'm speaking, this is like a very large service. Very, very large. There's a sign there as well. You know, if you want to put yourself in a place to be used by God, you have got to trust that you can build into others, you can pour yourself into others, and he will continue to fill you up. Now, check this out, because this is a light thing. It's a light thing for God. It says this, as the oil runs out, they say, there is not another, and then the oil stopped flowing. She came and told the man of God, and he said, well, go and sell the oil, pay your debts, and you and your sons can live on the rest. Man, come on. Come on. See, I tend to think of God as a minimalist. Well, God will take care of you. If you got some massive debts, all right, man, I guess you could have some compassion on people who are, okay, I'm going to give you just enough to get out of debt because you made your bed, now you got to lie in it, right? No one's like, is that all? Okay, all right. Sell those debts and you and your son go live in the rest. What's that mean? I don't know. Does that mean go take a vacation? Does that mean find some financial institution? You don't work and you live off the... I don't know, but here's what I know. It says, my God. God says, I love you so much. I'm giving you more than you need. More than you... I love you so much. I'm not even helping you. I'm not meeting your need. I'm meeting your wants. I tell you what, I think about myself, all my needs are handled. In fact, for most of us, we should say all our needs are handled. In America, there's nobody in America who dies of starvation. That's crazy. You don't become, unless, unfortunately, when you have mental disease and stuff that mess, that's awful. I'm telling you, we live in a country that we don't die of starvation. No one dies of exposure to the elements. They're alone. No one in our culture, all of our culture, well, if God's so loving, how can we say, hey, how about I didn't freeze to death or starve to death? Can we at least have a starting point that a lot of the world and most of world history has had those as real fears? We don't and never have and never will. Why? Because God not only meets all of our needs, but just about all of our wants. I haven't gotten all my wants. Like, I would love to have a cabin on a 12,000-foot peak in Colorado. It's one of my wants. Don't have that one yet. Have zero idea how I would ever get that. So there's some wants, but my gosh, God has been overflowing abundantly. And why is that? It's because he overflowingly, abundantly loves. He is resolved to love you, whatever the form of that love takes. And the problem with a jerk face isn't that they're a jerk face. The problem with a jerk face is they don't have enough oil to overflow. They're constantly operating, or we're constantly operating on empty. And jerk faces can't operate on empty because they don't have enough to go for their own soul, let alone other people around them. But when you get in a place where you resolve to love people around you and God says, oh, there's a person who's about me because they're about my value of love, he starts pouring into you, and you want to naturally start pouring into others. Jerk faces always feel empty. Those who are trending towards God in 2018 will feel full. And I want this for you in 2018. I'm going to invite out all the bands right now out of our sights. Let me just tell you, we're doing this series because I want the best for you in 2018. I want your 2018 to be the best year of your life. And I know that can only happen if the relationships are solid in your life. Who is my neighbor? The person you work out with at LA Fitness? Who's your neighbor? The person who's literally across the other side of the street from you? Who's your neighbor? The person in a third world country who had their fingers on your shirt and actually sewed it together? They're your neighbor. Who's your neighbor? God's your neighbor. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, all your soul, all your strength. You do that, 2018 will be great.